Hey, before we start today's show, I want to let you know that we have created a guide just for you, because choosing a cosmetology school is one of the biggest investments you're ever going to make. Most people just don't know the right questions to ask before they enter a cosmetology school. So that's why we've created a free video guide featuring over a dozen deep dive sessions on everything from financial aid to spotting school red flags, you know, the stuff you should avoid, to also just the truth about how to make more money in this industry. So don't start your journey blind. Get the uncut inside information you need to avoid the wrong school and start your career with confidence. You can get the guide by going to avedaidaho.com/guide. That's avedaidaho.com/guide. That link is also in our show notes. Now, here's today's show. Well, welcome to Uncut and Unfiltered Cosmetology Insights with Nathan Shaw, where we help aspiring and current beauty professionals master the business and the craft of cosmetology so that you can build a successful, long-lasting career. Your guide is, as always, Nathan Shaw, dedicated educator and a working man's hairdresser who successfully built his schools from his earnings from behind the chair. And now he generously shares his deep industry experience to challenge misconceptions and to teach you crucial and practical skills that you need to manage your career. I'm your host, Andy Traub, and today we're going to talk about something that if you get into the industry, it's probably because you've had a salon experience that you thought, man, I would love to have a job at a salon like that. I'd love to own a salon like that. So we're going to talk about how do you land your dream salon job. So Nathan, thank you for guiding us today.
Happy to be here, Andy.
So I know that I have been to places that I've never wanted to go again as a consumer. There's other places that I go to and I think, man, this is a really well-run, classy place. And your students at your schools, and I've got hundreds and hundreds of students, how many of them do you think have a vision for what kind of salon they want to work?
That's, as far as numbers, hard to say, of course, but I would say it's probably about 50-50, which doesn't seem very high, but I think a lot get in the industry knowing they want to do it.
Yeah.
Then a lot come in knowing where they want to go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you think about getting your dream job, you know, there's people that, you know, if you work in, sports, you want to work for a professional team, right? There's these different positions that you go, I want to someday work for them, right? Doing this. There's a couple different ways that people can get into their dream job. I want to share some of them, and then I want you to talk through it. The first is, you mentioned, like, you have to decide if you're not quite sure, or maybe you are sure, it's a good idea to just give yourself some time. Like, don't expect to get a job there right as soon as you graduate. Why is it important to give yourself some time before you get a job at your dream job?
I think it's like anything else. Like, you know, if it's your dream job, just because you graduated school doesn't mean you're necessarily ready for the dream job, right? I mean, all of life is a journey. We want what we want now. And that may be the dream job, maybe anything else. But when you actually like realize like, hey, this is what I'm striving for, it gives you the grace for yourself to be like, I might have to take some steps to get there. And so you realize that those steps aren't like failure of you getting your dream job. They're just part of the process. And by giving yourself that grace, you give yourself opportunity to grow so you're ready for that dream job.
So let's just say that someone says, you know, I want to work there. You know, and it's the nicest place in town. You know, is it healthy to say, you know, I'm going to give myself 5 years, or do they need 15? I mean, I was talking with an educator the other day, and you know, they said, yeah, if I want to be at this level, I need to do this thing for 10 years. And I was like, holy smokes, like that's the. So is it realistic to say, yeah, I could, if I do 2, 3, 4, 5 years, a great job, you know, I can position myself to work in my dream job.
I think 5 years is a realistic expectation. If you go in and you work hard, you're honing your craft and you're putting the right effort in. And again, it may not be 5 years. And again, it's one of those deals that if you're successful along the way at learning and getting better, you're still on the right path, I feel.
Yeah, you're still making money along the way. It's not like go to school for 5 more years, you know, which
exactly.
is a lot of places, right? How do you want to get that job? You got to go back to school, which is like, okay, you have to not have the job for 5 more years. No, we're not saying that. Go make money for 5 years, right? So one of the, there's two ways that you can really get into it. And one is we just kind of talked about, which is you can't get into it right away. You need to get better and then approach them. And we have some really practical advice about how to approach them and what you need to approach them with. The other is to get into your dream, I should say, place of employment early, but not into your dream job. So what would it look like to get a job at your dream job, but not have your dream job yet? Does that make sense? Of just getting your foot in the door. What could that look like?
I think that looks like I said, doing those menial tasks. Let me try to spit out my words here. But doing those menial tasks, being willing to go in and realize like, hey, I've got to start at the bottom. I may be sweeping floors. I may just be assisting other stylists, cleaning, you know, organizing shelves. It may be just assisting customers with retail, helping the front desk. You may be doing a lot of things that aren't your dream job, but by showing that you're going to put in the effort, it's a good way to get your foot in the door. And if, you know, it's like any business, when they see someone that puts in the effort somewhere else, they're always like, hey, if they give that type of effort in those things, what are they going to do with the next responsibilities we give them?
Yeah. Yeah. And you talk about having your foot in your door. I mean, both your feet are in the door at that point because you're there, you're working there. And I think that if you're looking for your dream job, that's a great advice, Nathan. It's like if they could see your work ethic every day and it's like, well, if you're that good at that, you're going to be, you know, if you're that motivated to sweep hair really well or assist really well, they have that saying, how you do one thing is how you do everything.
Exactly.
You know, like if someone's car is messy, their garage is probably messy and their bedroom's probably messy. And, you know, it's like that's just how they do everything. So if you bring that work ethic to that menial stuff, you're going to do otherwise. Tell me if someone was graduating from one of your schools and said, you know, I want to go get a job, you know, what, but they're not necessarily going to be cutting directly. What is the benefit of being an assistant? You talked about that a few times of assisting someone. How is that maybe even better than just going and cutting on your own?
I think it's the more advanced learning you get, right? Obviously, our goal with schools is we want to get the students as salon prepared as we possibly can. But you're dealing with a room full of students, and they all learn at different levels. So you're trying to keep them all on pace. And by going and assisting someone that maybe has 10, 15, 20 years of experience in the salon, and just assisting them, you can watch how they work, watch the techniques they're using. I did that a lot. You know, I had an older brother that did hair, excuse me, or does hair.
Yeah.
And I remember just going into a salon when I was in school and watching the way he'd texture hair, excuse me, which is just a way of like making sure you don't have heavy lines in the hair. And I learned so much. He'd do it so quick. And I was like, how does he do that? Right. I was blown away by it. But like watching him do it was really eye-opening, and realizing as I watched him more and more, he was doing it quick, but I could see the method he was using. And then that was something I was able to incorporate.
Yeah. I worked with someone yesterday. You know, one of my hobbies is to umpire sports and baseball and softball, things like that. I worked with a guy that had been doing it for 51 years.
Wow.
I'm 48. I'm like, you literally have been doing it longer than I have been alive. You know what I mean? And it's one of those things where he had forgotten more than I knew, you know, like that's how much knowledge he had. And I just think about the value of being around someone that has so much practical knowledge. It's like, I equate it to, there's a road in Kentucky as you go through Louisville, and it's a toll road, and it's, you know, they built this bridge and you got to pay $250 to go over the bridge every time you go over the bridge. And one time I was like, you know, I don't want to pay the toll. I'm going to take the non-toll route. And it took me like 25 minutes instead of literally 2 minutes. And I was like, okay, I'm going to just pay the toll every time. You're like, I get it. I get it why they built the big bridge. You know what I mean? And I think about that sometimes it's worth it to pay the cost, right? Sometimes it's worth it to say, I'm going to maybe even make a little bit less for a while, but I'm going to put myself in a position to learn so much more but be in the room with these great experts, you know?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about this other angle, which is you want to work somewhere, you want to approach them, and you know, this is a big deal. If you want to approach someplace and say, I want to work here, and they say, okay, well, we're always hiring the right people. Let's talk through and spend the rest of our time talking about if you're going to approach a salon owner or hiring manager, what do you have to know in order to put yourself in the very best position to get hired?
That's a great question. And I think the best answer is literally like, you've got to know how you're going to create value for that salon. You know, we go in oftentimes with a me mentality, like, hey, I want to get this job because it's about me. It's the job I want. I want to make, you know, a great living, which is all good. But, you know, things can be reciprocal. When you can go in and show you're going to add value, that's when the salons will be more likely to hire you. And there's multiple ways you can do that. One is, like I said, whether it's doing the menial tasks. I think another big one is going in and knowing the business numbers that matter. Because salon owners, if they own the business, they actually have to understand the numbers if they're a successful salon. And there's certain KPIs or, you know, key performance indicators in any business. If you can go in and you can tell them like, hey, here's my retail percentage or my retail sales per client. Here's my average service ticket dollar.
Yeah.
Here's my retention, you know, the number of guests come back to you percentage. Here's my rebooking percentage. And if you can show them like, hey, the guests I get come back to me, that is like a huge thing for salons because, you know, as we've talked before, it costs you approximately 8 times less in advertising costs to keep an existing guest than it does to get a new one. And if you can show that you're good at those types of things, the salon's going to be like, hey, this is an asset to our team because they're going to keep the guests we bring in and save our marketing budget rather than have to keep, you know, throwing money down the drain because those guests don't come back.
Well, let me break each one of those down a little bit. So average ticket, I could see a person saying, hey, right now I charge 45 or, you know, 50 or something like that. But this salon, like this is a nicer salon. And so they're like 85 or something, right? Is the salon owner going to be like, no, you don't charge enough? Or they're going to be like, okay, well, when you move here, your rates are going to go up. You might lose some clients, but our margins are better. Meaning like, should someone who's listening to this be kind of, let's say they're in the industry, should they be afraid to go because they're like, you know, my average ticket is lower than the salon's average ticket? Or should they just go and say, this is my number? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's going in again, knowing that your current price range may be cheaper than theirs, but if you can say, hey, here's what I charge and here's my average ticket.
Yep.
Even better is you can be like, here's how my average ticket grew year over year.
Oh, okay.
Because average ticket is not just like my cost of the haircut. It's like, it's also the fact that the guests did add on services. So they may have got more services with you and, you know, they bought retail products and that increases your average ticket. So if you can show that, like, you know how to grow your average ticket, and that's where the profitability is built in, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, imagine someone going in and saying, I'm just going to throw out silly numbers, but imagine them saying, hey, 3 years ago, my average ticket was 32. The next year, it was 37. The next year, it was 45. The next year, it was 49. It's like, you know, or the economy is really bad, but it stayed the same. They could be like, well, that's good. You didn't go down. Most people went down during that time. And that's how you can show up and say, hey, here's how I can bring value to your business. The retail sales, let's talk about that some. We haven't talked about that really much at all on the show. What would be, you know, let's just say a bottle of shampoo costs what? Just give me a number.
Let's say $20 for...
$20, okay. What is the profit margin on that for a general retail store? Is it 50% or is it...
It's approximately 50%, yes.
Okay, all right. So... And it's interesting because it's like it kind of makes sense where you go, okay, well, they bought it for 10, they sold it for 20, they make 10. Cuts. Sometimes people think that's harder to do the math on, but really it's probably not because you know there are costs to go into it and costs to go out. So what would be the margin on a $45 cut?
Most, again, it depends on the pay structure of the salon, but most salons, they're lucky if they make 10% on services.
Right, right, you know? Right.
Those are the well-run salons that make 10%, you know.
And the point is, So where's the $40.50 go for the $45 cut? It goes into labor. It goes into keeping the lights on. It goes into advertising. You know, it goes into taxes. It goes into, you know, the people that come every week to wash the windows. It goes into just running the business, right?
Yep.
But if you know that you could show up and say, hey, 50% of my clients buy a product, it's like, okay, that's great. You know what I mean? And here's the average ticket sale. I know a restaurant owner, and I think their margins were like 7 or 8%. And so he said, you know, Andy, think about it. When someone sends a $45 steak back, how many other meals do we have to sell to pay for that second steak? But yeah. If they buy a beer, because his thing was, because I was there when he's building the restaurant, and I said, this is a really big bar. He said, well, that's how I stay open, you know, because my margins on that are ridiculously higher than, you know, the steak, right? Even though the steak is way more complicated, right? And so just knowing that, right? Going in and knowing that. So let me ask you about this other one, which is the rebooking percentage. How hard is it to figure that out now?
With software, I mean, it is so simple. Almost every salon runs software, even solo stylists, you know, as I like to call them, are the ones that rent a booth or do a salon suite. You know, most of them have an app now that they can, their clients can book on, they can run their whole little business on. And if you rebook your client, they almost all have a report section, or I think they all do, that will show you your percentage of people that rebooked before they left.
And that, I guess that's the other question is, you know, I think that the most famous for this is like the dentist, which is like, when are you coming back? Because you're coming back, right? You know, and there's other places that, you know, are, you know, chiropractor or whatever. And it's like, you know, we just assume you're going to be back. So it would not count if they said, you know, I'll be back in 8 weeks, but I'll let you know. That wouldn't count as a rebooking?
No, that's retention. It means if the client does come back in 8 weeks, that you retain them. They didn't find another salon.
Right.
But rebooking is literally booking them before they leave so that they have the time reserved, both for your schedule and for theirs.
I have had, I'm thinking of two people that, you know, I've had do my hair in the last, you know, 10 years since I moved to this different place. And one always rebooked me. It was just part of it. It was like taking the cape off of me, you know, like I'm not going to wear that out. You know what I mean? Like taking it off, you know, and me paying them. These are things that it's like I always did, you know, like I took it off. I took that off and then they brushed my neck and then I give them money. You know, it was like, these are things you always do, you know, sit in the chair. How are you doing? And for them, for her, before I left, we rebooked. Maybe it was one out of 50 times that I didn't rebook because of something. You know, I was like, I don't know, something's come up or da, da, da. And then there's others I've had that, another one I had, which she just never asked.
Yeah.
And it's not because I didn't want to come back. She just never asked.
Yeah.
Why do you think some people don't rebook more intentionally?
I think there's two factors. I think number one, they don't realize the importance of rebooking, how rebooking affects the profitability of your business or affects your retention. Because if you're a busy stylist and you don't rebook, when that client's ready to book again, what if you don't have an opening and they really need their haircut? They might go somewhere else or to another stylist. And I think the bigger one, and this is I think the most realistic one, people are scared of rejection. They take, if someone doesn't want to rebook personally, like they're getting rejected, you know? And when really it's like, it's not about rejecting you. They just, to your point, one in 50 times, you didn't know your schedule or something and couldn't rebook. Most people, if they're going to come back, they'll rebook. And I think getting over that hurdle of being fearful of taking it personally, if they say, oh, I don't want to rebook or I can't rebook right now, I'll call in later, is what stops people.
Yeah. So one more question about sort of rebooking and sort of rules of the game, if you will. Is it acceptable ever, you know, I think with the second person I was thinking of, I just wasn't very consistent. I would wait till I just was like ridiculously, I was like, oh, I should have kind of cut a month ago. I mean, this is bad, 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 bad. I would have welcomed her sending me a text and says, hey, you know, it's been X weeks. You usually come every whatever weeks. How are we doing? I would have welcomed that. Never happened, though. Is it uncouth? Is it illegal? Is it bad? Is it against the rules to reach out and say, Can I see you soon?
Not at all. Not at all. And I think that, again, I don't know if I want to call them the hungry stylists. I wouldn't call them the better stylists, but the ones that are hungrier and like are trying to build their business, they'll do those little things. You know, they'll realize like, hey, if I'm slow right now, what's going on? Because I was busy 4 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes they'll go back, and I did those types of things. I'd find clients that hadn't shown up in a while, and I'd reach out. You know, even pre-text days, I'd make a phone call. I'd get on the phone, be like, hey, just checking in. And and a lot of people appreciate that and do want to book, right? And mm-hmm. and if they don't, you may have lost that client, you know, and that's okay. I don't want to like discourage someone because you won't keep every client forever.
Yeah, but then you obviously. Know, right? But then what, you know, and you don't have this unmet expectation. You know, it's like waiting for your date to show up and it's like, they're not coming. Just, you know,
pay for the
appetizer and go away. You know, like, so that's an interesting thing to, that again, you want to work at a better salon, a different salon, different job situation. You know, that's something, if you're in the industry now and you're listening to this, that's something you can do today.
Absolutely.
Like when you get done with this, go, okay, I have not done that. That is scary to me. That's where growth usually happens, is things we're scared of, is go start calling those people that are quote unquote late and, you know, and say, I'm thinking about you. Can I help? You know, those are great. So, how healthy do you think it is? My last question, for someone to have an aspiration once they've been in the business to work somewhere else versus just stay where they are. Do people switch a lot? Is that normal?
I think there's a lot more switching of stylists earlier in their career. And then sometimes they get to a point that they're like, they're happy where they're at. They're content where they're at. I think both are fine. I'm one of those people that I'm fairly driven. I'm always looking for the next thing. So I'm always trying to kind of like grow. And other people will find a place like, hey, and it doesn't mean like the location's bad. I just mean like, I'm great where I'm at. I'm making a good living. And I like my job. And that's great, right? If that's the case, maybe the thing you're shooting for next isn't going to make you as happy as or as fulfilled. So I think it's either one is valuable. It's just kind of knowing how you're wired. I think the bigger thing that I don't like seeing, and we see this throughout, you know, the entire world or you know, if you will, the nation, is like when people get to where they're making a certain amount of money, but they live on all of it, right? So they're kind of living paycheck to paycheck. Then the aspiration, because sometimes to take a step up to another salon or a desire, a career goal you have, maybe a slight financial step down at first. Because if you move salons, you might lose some of your clients and have to replace them, right? Especially if it's across town. So if you can live below your means, you can make those steps easier without fear of like, oh, I'm already living paycheck to paycheck. I can't afford
it. That's a great point. It's probably a great place to end, which is in that, hey, if you want to have the flexibility of starting a new place and maybe losing some clients because your prices went up, whatever it might be, you have to have some breathing room, right? So that's a great reminder to do, and we've had other episodes, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Profitability in the industry is, give yourself some breathing room. So when you do make the switch, you know, you're okay. So that's really, really helpful, very insightful as always. We always appreciate the practical knowledge you bring. So thank you as always.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Nate.